Welcome back to the Inside Public Accounting Podcast. I'm Rob Brown. Today's episode is for every firm waiting to see where they've landed or hoping to make the list for the first time. We're just days away from releasing this year's IPA 500. It is the flagship research project from Inside Public Accounting. And while we won't spoil the rankings today, we're going to pull back the curtain of what it takes to be here. I'm here with Chelsea Summers, the voice of the Inside Public Accounting outfit. Chelsea, great to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. So that's right. No spoilers today on the rankings, but we can absolutely talk about how the rankings work, what kind of strategies we've seen pay off, and a few early themes that are coming out of this data that firm leaders will want to pay attention to.
And we're going to not reveal the secrets, but because there's a lot goes on behind the scenes of putting research like this together. But people are always interested in how did they get that fact and how did they get all these firms to take part and how did they distill that research? So let's kick off segment one is what it takes to make the list. And a question people ask a lot, Chelsea, is how do I get on this IPA 500? Is it just about how big I am?
Yeah, so size matters, but it's not the whole story. The rankings are based on net revenue. So yes, you do need to hit a certain financial threshold. But what's interesting is how firms get there. Some are advisory heavy, some lean into compliance, others are climbing through M&A. There's no one size fits all formula to making the IPA 500 list.
So there is a bar, but it seems like the threshold changes, doesn't it? Because firms are changing, that the whole ecosystem's changing.
Yeah, it does. A few years ago, you could make the IPA 500 list with just under $5 million in revenue. For this year's list, you need over $6.4 million to hit number 500. And for that top 100 firms, the bar is now at $60 million. It's a reflection of how the profession is growing and consolidating.
I'm just thinking, we're an international podcast. To make the top 100th firm in the United Kingdom, you need about $5 million. So it's a much bigger market in the US. We get that. But 5 million doesn't get you anywhere near the lists like it used to. So that 20 million, 60 million, the bar's just going up, isn't it?
Absolutely, it is.
So we're talking about climbers, the anatomy of a climber. What moves firms up the list? Are there any traits that have come out from the research?
There's a few. One, they're typically focused. Firms that specialize in client accounting or advisory or a particular industry niche are often growing faster than those generalist firms. Also, they're intentional about M&A. It's not just about buying all the firms. It's about buying the firms that are the right fit, the right culture, and focusing on integration. And then three, they're focusing on their leverage. An average IPA 100 firm now has nearly 16 staff for every equity partner. That's a huge structural difference from those firms ranked number 401 to 500, where it's about 9.5 staff for every equity partner.
We talked about private equity before on the show and the whole M&A consolidation space. Is it actually a hack to get into the IPA 500 to say, let me buy a book of business, let me buy a few firms and I'll make the list?
It's a strategy. I don't know that it's a long-term strategy or a very successful one, but it's certainly one we've seen some firms utilizing right now. And again, it comes back to you need to purchase those firms and you need to invest in those firms that are right cultural fit for your firm for long-term success.
Yeah. There's a lot of questions and curiosity about this whole thing. And I'm going to go through some of the quick questions. We encourage our guests and our audience to engage with the show and ask us questions. You can reach out to us on LinkedIn or wherever the show appears. These are questions we get a long time. We get all the time. Are you ready to answer a few quick ones?
Lightning round. Let's go.
Okay. Do the rankings include the Big Four?
They do, but we carve them out in almost all of our analysis because they're operating on such a totally different scale than the rest of the firms.
Okay. What if a firm doesn't submit data?
So if we can't verify the numbers or get the neat detail we need, we won't rank them. That's how we keep the list credible. Participation in the survey matters, but we need to make sure that the information that they're submitting is accurate and valid.
Next question. Do mergers count, Chelsea?
Yes. The rankings reflect the most recent fiscal year revenue, including revenue from any acquired firms. If the merger closed before the year end, then it's included.
What about geography? Do you normalize for staff size or where a firm is based?
We don't. It's a raw net revenue ranking. Inside the report, we do provide context on everything from revenue per employee to service line mix to partner compensation and look at that based on size of firm and geography. But for the rankings, it's just raw revenue.
What about international revenue?
So it's only included if it's earned by US-based offices. The rankings focus on domestic performance, so global totals are not included in the rankings.
We're hearing a lot about how the type of revenue is shifting, particularly to a more advisory-focused different service lines. Do you treat, say, advisory revenue different to maybe audit or tax?
We don't. Revenue is revenue. We track service lines in the full report so you can see how the firms are evolving, but it doesn't matter where the revenue is coming from. It's included in their totals.
Now, it's a big launch when you bring this out. Do firms know in advance where they appear?
They do. Participating firms will receive their rank confidentially the day before the public release, so they can prepare communications if they choose.
Yeah. Well, if we asked 100 people what the economy's like, we'd get 100 different answers. Do you adjust for inflation in these findings?
We don't. Revenue is reported as is, but I do some analysis in the reporting, looking at inflation and how that is affecting numbers and how a firm would have looked in 2000 versus now based on the inflationary revenues.
What happens if two firms report the same revenue?
Oh, good question. Technically, they'll tie. We've had it happen before, but it's not something that's very common. In that case, both firms will have the same ranking for that year.
Is it a pay-to-play? Chelsea, is there a cost to be ranked? Can I bribe you?
There is not. I will take coffee or any other gifts you want to send me, but no, there is no pay to play. Ranking is based solely on verified survey participation and reported revenue, and all participation is, there is no charge.
Okay. Question for the accounting geeks. What if a firm's fiscal year doesn't match up with the calendar year?
Sure. That's fine. We rank firms based on their most recent fiscal year, whether that's December or June or November or anything in between, whatever their most current fiscal year is, what their ranking is based on.
Intapp Public Accounting has a big audit focus. Do firms have to be audit firms to be eligible?
Nope. Any firm that has any public accounting services, whether that's advisory, tax, audit, client accounting services, if it's a public accounting service, then they would be included.
Compensation's a big ticket item. It's a hot topic, isn't it? Do you track partner comp or is it just revenue for the whole firm?
So we track both. The rankings are strictly revenue based, but the full report will include tons of other metrics, compensation, leverage, margins. More than 100 different data points are included in our analysis.
Well, that's a lot of quick questions I've just thrown at you. Thank you for those. If you've got more questions for Chelsea and this survey, that the research that we're bringing out, then do let us know and we'll see if we can weave those into the show. Let's, without giving spoilers, Chelsea, let's talk about some of the key themes that are emerging from this year's data. So not giving anything away, what are you seeing in what we're about to look at?
Yeah, I'll give you three trends that I'm seeing.
Private
equity isn't slowing down. I feel like we are having the same conversation over and over again, but private equity is the big hot topic, and that's certainly not slowing down. We saw more firms this year either take investment or explore it. So it's no longer a novelty. It's really becoming part of the landscape and the conversation.
It feels like a juggernaut, doesn't it, private equity, Chelsea?
It certainly does. It feels like you can't have a conversation about the accounting profession right now without that being at the back of your mind or the elephant in the room, that every decision is being based in part by those changes.
Yeah. Okay. So we've hit private equity. Give us another one.
Two, offshoring is up again. The number of firms using offshore staff keeps climbing, and it's not just used for tax preparation. We're seeing whole teams overseas. In 2024, offshore staff made up about 3.1% of firm-wide headcount. This year, it's 4.7%. So firms are having more and more of their staff in overseas locations.
And that's only going to go up again next year, isn't it?
I anticipate that, yes. Yeah. And then the third trend I'm seeing is organic growth is cooling, but just a little. It's still solid, but down from the post-pandemic spike. Firms are getting smarter and not just bigger. Organic growth for the IPA 100 this year was 7.8. When we add in all those mergers, it's up to 10.4. Last year, 10.6 and 12.4. So we're slowing slightly, but firms are still in growth mode.
And I get a sense that it's not just about scaling and growth, it's strategic. You said with the M&A, there's got to be culture fit and a lot of other things lined up. So it seems firms have been a lot more deliberate about the capital, the talent, the pace of growth. Do you think these shifts are driven by market pressures, internal disciplines? What's driving those?
I think it's both. The market seems to be forcing a reset, the labor costs, technology investments, even client expectations. But the best firms aren't just reacting to those. They're getting clear about what the growth should look like for their firm. Sustainable, focused, and intentional growth is what they're looking for.
Yeah, strategy, really, isn't it? It's down to strategy.
It does. Everything comes back to strategy.
Well, did anything surprise you? Because you get these stats and some things stay the same, some things really jump out at you. So there were any anomalies or any things that opened your eyes?
Yeah, as I've spent the last several weeks with my nose in an Excel spreadsheet, here are a couple of fun ones that jumped out to me.
Okay.
Talking about offshoring, and you mentioned there's going to be more of it, about 85% of the top 100 firms plan to do more outsourcing or offshoring next year. So not holding the same amount, not cutting back, but they're increasing. So it's a strategy that seems to be working for them.
We might do an episode on that, but it is such a big topic. And it's become more acceptable, hasn't it, outsourcing? A few years ago, people didn't really understand it. They were scared to dip their toes into it. But now it's becoming one of the ways to grow.
Absolutely. Almost a necessary strategy.
Okay. Yeah. So what else caught your eye?
So the average firm in the IPA 100 completed 1.2 mergers this year, and that's up from 0.8 last year. So consolidation is really starting to pick up pace.
1.2 mergers a year for the average firm in the top 100. That's astonishing.
Yes.
Because some firms are still trying to stay independent, so they'll be doing no mergers.
Significantly less. And we're seeing it as we're analyzing the firms on the 500. There's a lot of firms that were on the list last year who are not this year because they've been acquired, which is always unfortunate for us. But we're seeing a lot of change and a lot of shifting on the rankings with firms having a huge amount of growth because of the big mergers that they're doing, and firms that are being removed from the list because they've been acquired over the last year.
Give us one more eye opener, Chelsea, before we leave this segment.
So I thought it was really interesting. Technology spending is inching up, which makes sense. Firms are investing in more technology, but recruiting costs are trending down. They dropped nearly 20% from the average recruiting cost last year. It's about 0.63% of firm revenue.
It seems like a wild combination.
Right. More global hires, more mergers, but they're spending less on finding people. Is that because the people crisis that we were going through several years ago with a mass exodus is slowing down and the firms need to recruit less? Is it because some of the spending that used to be spent on recruiting is now using technology and is cheaper and firms are finding more cost-effective ways to recruit, or firms just giving up on recruiting? I'm not sure what to make of that, but I thought it was very interesting.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking, a firm's going to end up outsourcing the whole business. Is everything going to be outsourced?
Yeah, it might look that way from the outside, but it's really about optimization. Firms are realizing that they can grow without throwing all the bodies at every problem. And technology is filling some gaps. Offshoring teams are picking up others, and recruiting is targeted or paused, maybe?
So this is a date that's been circled on your calendar for some time. This big piece of research is going to come out. What happens next?
So firms that are on the IPA 500 are going to be notified on July 29th. The rankings will be publicly available then on July 30th. Every firm that participates in the survey will receive a copy of the rankings, and then our August IPA Insights will break down all the major trends.
Purpose of this show is we're going to be highlighting some of those trends on the podcast, aren't we?
We are. We'll be back next week. We're going to be one day later with a Wednesday podcast to talk about the release of the top 100. We're going to talk who's on the list, who's off the list, the fastest growing firms, some merger trends, and some strategy spotlights from firms who have made major moves this year.
Well, we want to hear from you, our listeners, our audience, whether you're ranked, whether you're close to it, whether you're just curious, whether you want to be on it, or you're just benchmarking from the sidelines. How is your firm preparing for growth? And what do you want to know about this research that we're doing? Reach out, share your story. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah. And if you're one of the firms on the list, congratulations in advance. We know how much work it takes to get on the list. It's not just about the numbers. It's about the leadership, the culture, the strategy, and staying sharp through every shift in the market. You've earned your spot. And if you're climbing the list or you're charting your own path, we see that too. Keep pushing.
And it's a big deal. Firms brag about this, don't they, Chelsea? That they put it on their accolades and their website and nominated for and in the top 10, in the top 20. It's a big deal.
Yes, it is. We see it in the email footers. We see big banners on their website. We see LinkedIn posts and lots of social media about the rankings. So firms are very proud to be on the rankings, and we're very proud to create the rankings for them.
Yeah. Well, in true American language, we are super stoked and excited to be bringing this out. That's me, my British voice. That's it for today. Subscribe to the show, forward it to a colleague, and we appreciate your patronage here. And get ready. The ranking season is here. Chelsea Summers, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob. We'll talk soon.